Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on a Hoosier Marine killed in the recent bombing attack at an airport in Afghanistan. Jenny Lindsay reports on the lack of adequate access to high-quality preschool and childcare options in Indiana. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Army veteran Chris McClanathan on his work to help his former interpreter get evacuated from Afghanistan as the Taliban take over that country. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. A 22-year-old U.S. Marine from Logansport was killed in a recent bombing attack in Afghanistan, one of 13 American service members who lost their lives. Corporal Humberto Sanchez was assisting in evacuation efforts at the Kabul airport when he was killed. Sanchez was a student in the Logansport Community School Corporation. In an email, Logansport High School Principal Matt Jones said Sanchez was one of six students in his class to enlist in the Marines. Jones called Sanchez a dedicated artist who played varsity soccer, enrolled in honors and dual college credit classes, and was on the homecoming court his senior year. In a statement, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb said, "Few among us answer a call of duty so dangerous as Corporal Sanchez volunteered to do." Thousands of people have made their way to the Kabul airport in an attempt to escape the country in the wake of the U.S. withdrawal and the Taliban takeover. More than 200 people died in last week's attack. On Sunday, the bodies of the 13 service members were returned to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware in a dignified transfer ceremony.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Munster police say BP has detected an underground anomaly electronically in their pipeline along Columbia Avenue near Ilya Drive, so crews will have to excavate to inspect and replace as required. Work began on Monday and will continue through Wednesday, September 8th. Police say the northbound curbside lane of Columbia will be blocked with traffic cones and traffic will be diverted to the northbound center left turn lane, allowing westbound traffic the ability to either turn left at Fisher Street or continue north past the high school. Traffic cones will be removed nightly if vehicles' equipment are not staged there overnight.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A former member of Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson's administration pleaded guilty Tuesday to wire fraud for concealing information from a bankruptcy court. 55-year-old Mary Cossey served as Freeman Wilson's Director of Constituent Services and as Gary Housing Authority Executive Director between 2013 and 2015. The U.S. Attorney's Office says she allegedly concealed income and assets in violation of federal law that requires all persons seeking bankruptcy protection to truthfully disclose their financial activity. U.S. Attorney Tina Nome says even though she was prohibited from incurring new debts during her bankruptcy case, Cossey charged over $240,000 on a credit card owned by someone described in the grand jury indictment as Individual A. She allegedly used that credit card during the course of her bankruptcy for personal expenses, including several vacations, luxury clothing, and accessories and jewelry. Nome says Mary Cossey repaid most of her debt to Individual A, but unsecured creditors received only 27% repayment for debts that were discharged in bankruptcy.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Amazon's newest facility in Northwest Indiana is now open for business. company officials recently opened its 141,000 square foot delivery station in the Ameriplex at the Crossroads Business Park along Broadway Avenue. Packages from Amazon's fulfillment and sortation centers are sent to delivery stations for the final step in getting to customers. Amazon put in a more than $30 million investment in land, building, and equipment for the delivery station built on 35 acres in the Ameriplex. Amazon, in March, announced it was constructing the Miraville Delivery Station, a project that created 300 permanent positions as well as 100 temporary construction jobs. Miraville Town Manager Pat Reardon said the new delivery station will generate hundreds of thousands of dollars in new tax revenue each year.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is preparing to receive 5,000 Afghan evacuees at Camp Atterbury in the coming weeks, with the first 1,000 set to arrive by this weekend. Indiana National Guard Head General Dale Lyles says the state is bringing resources and personnel from outside Indiana to meet the needs of evacuees. And he stresses that Atterbury won't need to deplete any resources from the state, particularly when it comes to COVID-19.
We understand that emergency room wait times are higher than normal. We do not want to pressure local hospitals.
After an initial 14-day medical screening, evacuees will eventually be able to leave Atterbury temporarily and permanently. But Lyle says that's only after a fourfold vetting process. First, to get out of Afghanistan, then to holding areas in Europe or the Middle East, then once they arrive in the United States, and then again at Camp Atterbury itself. Governor Eric Holcomb says once they're cleared to permanently resettle in the U.S., he hopes refugees choose Indiana.
These are the same folks who, for decades, have assisted and aided us.
Holcomb says the state will be transparent with local communities and law enforcement about the vetting process and when evacuees will be able to leave Camp Atterbury.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Porter County Health Officer Dr. Maria Stamp is urging that all school districts adopt mask-wearing policies. She says infected children can spread the disease to the community at large. But the governor's latest executive order regarding COVID-19 says school systems are responsible for protocols at schools. And that means that county health departments can only offer guidance and recommendations. Porter County is now one of only three of Indiana's 92 counties to be in the yellow category on Indiana's COVID-19 dashboard map, and she expects it to be elevated into the orange category soon. The highest category is red.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The state's latest update on COVID-19 in schools shows more than 5,000 newly reported student cases, a new record for the second week in a row. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, as the state pushes for expanded COVID testing in schools, schools are scrambling to find the time and people to do it.
More than 4,000 of the newly reported student cases are from the past 7 days. Many schools have updated mask policies as outbreaks continue. Now, state officials are pushing for more COVID testing in schools. Fort Wayne Community Schools spokesperson Krista Stockman says the district already conducts at least 100 rapid response tests a day for students and staff experiencing possible COVID symptoms, but expanding preventative testing remains difficult.
We've had so many positive cases and our nurses are just overwhelmed. So we haven't been able to take the next step with that.
The state said last week it estimates only about 10% of schools are offering testing. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
New FBI data shows hate crimes are increasing in the Hoosier State. There were 186 hate crimes reported across Indiana in 2020. That's more than double the 80 hate crimes reported to the FBI in 2019. The information comes from data received from 174 law enforcement agencies in Indiana. Another 186 agencies did not report data. Nationwide, in 2020, there were 7,554 single bias incidents involving 10,528 victims.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
No counties in Indiana provide adequate access to high-quality preschool and child care opportunities. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports that's according to a new analysis from the nonprofit Early Learning Indiana.
The Closing the Gap report looks at several factors to calculate communities' early learning resources. That includes how many seats are available, quality of programs, affordability, and how many options families have. Maureen Weber, CEO and president of Early Learning Indiana, says overall capacity building has outpaced improvements to quality.
We've done a lot of work in recent years to help communities create seats, and that's starting to pay some dividends, and we see that here.
The report says Indiana has moderate access overall, but varies by location. Weber points out maintaining enough staffing for existing providers remains an urgent and growing challenge as the pandemic continues, which could negatively affect access too. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The COVID-19 pandemic has been stressful on everyone, but healthcare workers may be affected more than anyone. Some nurses are burnt out and planning to leave the profession. Meanwhile, colleges are preparing new graduates to take their place and deal with the pressures of the job. SideFX Public Media's Stephanie Whiteside reports.
Heather Hampson works at John A. Logan College in Southern Illinois, helping to train the next generation of nurses. I spoke with Hampson and her colleagues in the empty nursing lab, where teaching dummies lay in gurneys next to IV stands and crash carts. She says the pandemic brought a lot of attention to the profession, and that motivates students.
Most people look at this nurses and all healthcare providers as heroes through this pandemic. So I think that it encourages them and energizes them and motivates them to want to select this career path.
At the community college, instructors use labs and dummies to give students hands-on learning. The pandemic changed that, forcing students into online classes for a while. Hampson says that actually helped working students who worried about being quarantined and missing classes.
Many of them work in healthcare now, and so they would have high exposures. So the fact that we were able to offer our classes in that setting so that they didn't miss any school was a great way to alleviate some of that stress and help them be successful.
Elena Novelli was studying to become a registered nurse. She was already working as an LPN, which became emotionally difficult during the pandemic.
It is very stressful, especially to watch residents die that have been in the facility for a long time and you've grown a strong connection with. It has been mentally exhausting and physically exhausting.
Throughout the pandemic, instructors did their best to continue essential hands-on training. Instructor Aaron McGuire says clinical work is essential for students.
Hopefully they were able to see what acute care is like in the moment, rather than maybe waiting until after they graduate before they see their first real patient.
Hampson says students also worked with local health departments.
And they gave over 30,000 immunizations in the last few weeks. I feel like that helped spin it so that they felt more in control and had this positive effect on our community.
McGuire says seeing what it's like to work as a nurse, including the stress of dealing with COVID, can help students choose the right path for them.
And I think when people saw the nurses who are out there on the front line and how tired they are and the struggles that they were having, you know, just doing their job in a pandemic, I think some of them at least took a hard look at it and really had to do some self-reflection and see, is this really what I want to do?
Even some practicing nurses are involved in that reflection. A survey done last December found nearly one in four nurses were planning to leave bedside care or the profession. Learning to handle the pressures of their job is part of the nursing education at Logan. Instructor Kristen Yersenovich says self-care is key.
It is very, very important that as a nurse, you cannot care for others if you cannot care for yourself. So putting yourself first at some times, having positive coping mechanisms and outlets is number one in priority to giving care to others.
Hampson encourages students to eat well, exercise, and find time for activities like yoga or reading. For Novelli, the pandemic resulted in new habits to shake off the stress of work and school.
So that took me a while to get a hang of, but actually at the beginning of the COVID, I picked up running, and then I got into the gym a lot. Just having healthy habits and something that I could go and take my anger and frustration out at, the gym was really the place.
Despite the pandemic, staff say none of the students quit the program, and they've seen even more people consider enrolling. Andrew Biley, a student, says quitting wasn't an option for him.
Mentally, the biggest thing is it's scary. If you have the right amount of fear, it gives you the drive to do the best you can. Quitting's a very easy thing, but I think I used it to motivate me to just continue and finish and it helped me become better than I ever would have been.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Steph Whiteside.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Army veteran Chris McLanathan.
We are waiting now almost by the moment to find out more about what is happening in Afghanistan in particular as Americans are being evacuated from Kabul. But how about all of the efforts that have been trying to, in the recent weeks, certainly, and up to the decision to pull the troops out of Afghanistan, getting interpreters and their family members out? A number of veterans are helping out, and one of them in particular is a Northwest Indiana veteran. Chris McClanathan's with us to talk about his efforts and others of his colleagues trying to help those people who want to get out of Afghanistan to be able to do so. And Chris, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us first about the concerns that you have had and others I'm sure have had as well in people that you have had the opportunity to work with while you served over in Afghanistan.
Well, I mean, it's a very complicated situation right now. And, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. And unfortunately, there's a great deal of chaos in terms of, you know, reports on the ground of what exactly is going on and who's getting on these flights, because all indications from the ground are that at some points they were just literally scooping up anyone they could find, and which is fine to have, you know, to scoop up the refugees, but it also means that there were not seats for people with legitimate documents to get on the plane, if that makes sense.
I know that a lot of the problems that have come about here are because of people that you have had the opportunity and others have had the opportunity to work with while serving overseas. The interpreters in particular, these are Afghans who pretty much have put their lives on the line, just as the soldiers have done, to be able to help out the soldiers in the effort to understand what's happening at the time that they're on duty over in Afghanistan. And now, as the Americans are leaving, and I know that in particular in the information that we have is that you've talked in one particular case to a fellow named Romal, who has helped you out when you were both working together in 2011. Will you tell us a little bit about him and the ways that you've had a chance to work with him, and in turn, how it's turned into now him looking for help to get he and his family out?
Well, you know, we worked together, probably half of the days that I was over there in Afghanistan. So I was there for almost a year, and he was helping us out do translation at the gate for people entering the base and out on convoys to talk with the local population. So at times I was working with him for 12 hours a day, every day. He was just like one of us, really.
when you work with somebody so closely, what's the experience like? Is it just as if you had somebody like another part of you, only this time it's somebody separately who understands the language and the characteristics of the people that you are around at the time, and certainly the traditions of life in Afghanistan?
Exactly. You know, they, like, the interpreters, they weren't just like, translate this document.
Right.
You know, they were giving us an insight into the culture and really helping us navigate, because, you know, their culture is very different from ours, and we want to be as respectful as we can. And they were really helpful in facilitating that and making sure that what we were trying to communicate was really getting across.
Now, you were deployed to northern Afghanistan back in 2011, and I guess you've stayed in touch over the years, but come 2021 now, how did it turn out that you have this all of a sudden contact with him and with his family?
Well, I mean, you know, we kind of, you know, sometimes you fall out of touch, and, you know, on and off, we were friends on Facebook, kind of liking each other's posts, and, you know, for a while as we did our thing, and then when this whole... the whole evacuation effort kicked off and the Taliban started taking cities, I reached out to him because he was on my mind at the time. So I reached out via Facebook and said, hey, are you okay? And he said that he was safe for now, but he was scared for what was going to happen and that he needed my help. So that's kind of where it all started.
How long ago has it been since you finally got this very frantic set of conversations with him?
It's going on 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks now that I've been kind of working pretty much full time in this effort.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that you know that the contacts have certainly, it shows that how close a friendship, even if it's just a professional relationship, like in this case, a soldier and a interpreter. You know, you're figuring you're not talking about a you know, much more personal than that, but it really is, because he's so much a part of you. He's helping keep you alive, and you're helping him stay alive too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, it's definitely not just a professional relationship. You know, he became as much of a brother to us as our fellow service members. You know, when you're over there in that kind of situation, you have to know that the person next to you has your back 100% no matter what, or the whole thing just falls apart. And so those interpreters who really put their lives on the line for us really, really just meshed in there, especially because they didn't have weapons. So they were completely dependent upon us for their protection. And that creates a really strong bond that doesn't go away after years of no contact. You know, you can just pick up like it was, exactly like it happened 5 minutes ago.
You've given us an idea of certainly the concerns in trying to help a fellow soldier in a way, although he's not with the U.S. Army. He's a fellow who's interpreting for the U.S. Army in that particular role. In trying to help get him and his family out, what's been the procedure, I guess, or the technique that you have used up to this point in trying to lobby the U.S. government to get him out of Kabul and to the United States?
I mean, basically what it's been is I've been reaching out to every contact I can, getting in contact with congressional offices, and there's been quite a few congressional staffers who have been working extremely hard to try and get these documents over to the State Department and to try and get them on a list for evacuation. But unfortunately, there's just so much bureaucracy that gets in the way of this kind of thing that it makes it really difficult to really reach someone.
I imagine this is going to be a situation that's going to continue on, even though we know we're just hours away from the end of at least the scheduled end for the evacuation of Americans from Afghanistan and from Kabul in particular. This is going to continue on past that point, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, we have a thing in the military, and we take it very seriously, is we don't leave people behind, no mm-hmm. matter what. And that includes our allies. So while some of our leadership may have forgotten that, the rest of us have not.
Chris McClanahan is a U.S. Army veteran. He served and was deployed to northern Afghanistan back in 2011. He worked very closely with a man named Romal, who's an outgoing and a very effective interpreter while he was serving his time over in Afghanistan. And now he's doing his best, along with other veterans, trying to do the same for other people from Afghanistan to get them out of Afghanistan and their family members and to the United States or someplace safer for them to live as the Taliban have taken over Afghanistan. Chris, thank you very much for spending time with us. We'll check back with you, and let's hope that at least the rest of the days ahead will work out well for everybody.
Thank you. I hope I have good news to share with you soon.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link.
For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.